Hello, guests. Welcome to Business IQ Radio here today. Don Byrne and my co-host, as always, is in the studio with me, Andrea O'Brien with the Small Business Development Center. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Don. So great to see you again.
Thank you very much. An interesting topic for today, and thank you for arranging for a guest. Let me start off by just asking you, does cyber crime, cybersecurity, your digital privacy, are these issues that you think about, you worry about?
Well, I'll tell you, not always, but what I do kind of wonder about is, I know people are concerned about it, and I'm not sure what kind of damage can be done if somebody has access to my photos. I mean, for me personally, sure, some people with more, with any notoriety, you know, need to really protect their privacy. But the general public, I don't have my arms fully around what the exposure is, what the damage could be.
Yeah, so I think we can ask our guest today, who's a repeat for us, our subject matter expert, Lila Robeck, is going to be in here with
Lila's
us.
Lila's fabulous, very knowledgeable, right. Really, and a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, and you know, in my experience, she takes complicated subjects and makes them understandable to people. But, you know, given the fact that you do all of this work with small businesses at the Small Business Development Center, she's going to be talking about a topic that has serious implications for
more serious
companies
now.
And businesses.
Yeah, more.
Yeah, and ever-growing. You're right.
Well, you know, so today's show, I did want to mention that Lila is the president of Digital International, which is a cybersecurity company.
And here in New Hampshire.
Here in New Hampshire. And on May 25th, a new regulation is taking effect, which businesses have to be aware of because I understand the penalties are quite steep. Mm-hmm. And it involves being careful with the data that you collect on your customers. And
especially if they're European citizens, of the EU.
It's really focused on EU. So if you're a business doing business in Europe or with EU companies, you must pay attention to this or you could be jeopardizing your business.
Yeah, and that's even gets to the point that if you have a website up and you're taking credit card purchase orders over the web and they're coming out of Germany or France or someplace like that, you're going to be subject to this to this regulation. This is really an overwhelming to a lot of people.
One customer.
Topic, just even and one. Or one employee.
One employee, one customer. You know, it's not a topic that we're going to just talk about once. Cybersecurity is a big, big topic. You know, it plays into big data. It plays into
Internet of Things, the IoT, as it's called, Internet of Things.
All of that. And businesses, sure, you have to be good at what your business is, but now you also need to really master, Internet security, cybersecurity. You need to get on top of that if you're a business today.
Yeah, and this whole issue of privacy, and it's gotten some recent press and exposure. And there are actually some interesting historic aspects that led to the EU coming out with this. I think we'll ask Lila about the right to be forgotten, which is a term that maybe not a lot of Americans know about, but is a really interesting, has a lot of interesting and historic implications to it. So I think we can probably invite Lila into the studio now and get going. Anything else you'd like to add before we launch the show?
No, let's bring her in.
All right, so you're listening to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH, and I'll turn it over to you, Andrea, to welcome our guest.
Well, Lila, we'd love to welcome you back to Business IQ Radio. It's so great to see you again.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very thrilled about being here again.
Well, we got very good response to your first show on here, talking in general about some cybersecurity things, and so we're very delighted to have you back. You're one of our first repeat guests, so it's been about a year?
Nice. Yes, it's been about a year since I founded Digital International. So yes, I'm very excited about being here again.
You are our SME, subject matter expert, on all things cybersecurity. So we really appreciate you coming back, especially to talk about the topic today, Don, which is what?
GDPR. And this is a very hot topic. And again, we get a lot of interest from the listeners to everything dealing with cybersecurity. In fact, you know, with some of the recent activities around personal data and the testimony of Mark Zuckerberg in front of Congress speaking. I mean, it's a very, very hot topic these days. So we're really happy to have you here and help us get an understanding and see how this all ties into Brexit, which I know is a consideration here in this whole
area. Oh, really?
Area. Sure. So.
Okay. Well, so I'd like to start this discussion about defining what the letters GDPR stands for.
Of course. So GDPR, for those who do not know, it stands for General Data Protection Regulation, and it is the new set of laws and regulations created by the European Union that are going to be effective upcoming next month on May 25th, and establishes a set of regulations that companies must take with regards to user data privacy.
And that's been in the news a lot, data privacy. And so, but what I'm surprised at is that, again, it's Europe driving American businesses to have to step up the game and protect, be more protective of data.
Yes. Unfortunately, here in the U.S., we don't have a set of laws and regulations that protects the overall user and their control and, you know, like ownership over their own data and privacy. We do have some sectors that will have some regulations like HIPAA when it comes to the health industry, or NIST when it comes to the energy industry. But overall, unfortunately, we don't. So it's upsetting, but at the same time, I'm very happy with Europe and, you know, like the European Union and what they have been doing, trying to push for, you know, like some more control and protection for the users overall when it comes to their data.
You know what I heard, and I don't want to randomly go at this discussion, but I'll just throw this fact out. If you are a company doing business and you have one customer in the European Union or the UK even, you have to know about this law and comply with this law. Is that?
That's correct. So on companies, the big change about the GDPR, because the European Union already has some laws and regulations with regards to data privacy. However, with these new regulations that are coming up in May, the big change is that they are going to apply not only to companies in Europe or within the European Union, but to companies all over the world. And if they have even one user that is a European Union subject, that is a resident of the European Union. So you're correct. So if you are a company and you have one user there, you are subject to those regulations for that one customer.
And that's why when you said, even if from the UK, not so much the UK because of Brexit, the breaking away of the UK from the EU, this has caused a real stampede of concerns because so many European businesses do business in the UK and the UK does business with them. And now we have to see, if I'm getting this right, Lila, that the UK has to requalify to be seen as a trusted environment that can be allowed to do business and hold this data. So it's, I can tell you from doing business with some people in the data center business, they've had to decide that they may want to move their data centers that are holding purchase, you know, retail, you know, credit card information, things like that, into Europe and out of the UK because they really can't hold and store that information because it has privacy considerations to it, if I'm understanding this correctly. So,
yeah, actually, I am not 100% sure whether the UK will be also under the GDPR protection or not. So this is something that I would feel much better just looking into it.
I'm pretty sure of it.
For sure. Okay.
I'm pretty sure of that. And it's really been a big concern, again, because they have to readjust all of their businesses because of that. But you're right. I mean, this has to do with, even if, I mean, I've heard, maybe you can tell me if you've heard this or not, but even things like signing into buildings in the U.S., if you're asked to present a driver's license or a passport, capturing that personal information is going to be subject to regulation. You have to protect it. And they're asking for some kind of security officers to be established in every one of the companies. And so there's a real, there's an overhead. There's a lot of money overhead associated with this.
Yeah. So basically the GDPR, it institutes that you need to have total consent of users to gather, distribute, or use any type of personable, identifiable information. However, we do have to pay attention to the fact that PII here in the U.S. and PII in Europe, it has a different meaning. So, for example, in Europe...
What is PII?
Oh, it's a personable identifiable information. Okay. Yeah. So here in the U.S., we would consider PII things that are very personal, like your ID, your home address, or, you know, like Don was saying. But in Europe, even your IP address is considered PII because they consider PII anything that is direct or indirectly taking someone to your identity. So business must be really careful with all the data and the information that they are gathering, collecting, sharing, and using. And users must consent explicitly to that action. So the main thing with the GDPR is that users must have total control over their data and ownership.
Is there going to be, I mean, this consent... Is it something that the customer will know they're giving? Is it, you know, will there be a box?
So that's a very catchy thing with the GDPR. Because many companies today, like we have seen with Facebook, for example, you have the fine prints that tell users how their information is actually being used. However, with the GDPR, the companies are actually obligated to explicitly tell customers about how their data is being gathered, collected, used, shared, and everything else. And like I said, it must be explicit. So whether through like checkboxes on the agreements or the customers will have to initial saying that they actually read that specific part. So no more fine prints.
Okay, so here's my pet peeve. Mm-hmm. I'm on a platform. I want to use the platform or the app or whatever, and it asks me to agree to the terms of service.
Yeah.
I, of course, am not reading. I'm not reading that, nor do I really, you know, I might read something that I don't really agree with and don't want them to, but I want to use that service, that app. Mm-hmm. I want, and so I feel forced. I have no other option. It doesn't allow me to cross lines out. I either agree to what they want me to agree to, or I go, or I turn off the...
You mean you want a line item veto? Is that what you're saying?
Like, right. Or I just want...
That would be awesome.
You know what? I would like it to be, you know, for the layperson.
But you know what? So, of course, certain data must be gathered in order to provide certain services. If you want to use, for example, a photo app, obviously the photo app will need to have access to your camera. However, one of the things with the GDPR is that when companies are requesting some information as an obligatory type of data, they must tell you why is that obligatory. So they can just ask you for your, I want to have access to your microphone if it's just a photo app. They don't need that. Mm. So they, you know, like they can't enforce that. So it's almost like when you go on Facebook now, you see that a lot of changes has happened on Facebook over the past few months. One of the things is that when you are adding, you know, like an app, for example, on Facebook, now you can actually click and uncheck certain information that you don't want to share if they are not essential to the provision of their service. So now you can do that. And that's one of the GDPR things. So it is going to, you know, like address your concern.
It's getting better. It's getting more consumer. It's paying attention to the consumer more. You know, for most of us that use apps and our phone, most of us, and, you know, maybe this is an erroneous statement, but do not go very deep into any of the settings.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to really, because I don't really know what pushing some buttons will do. But I know that Lila took me into my phone app to show me what apps were accessing what pieces of information. I was shocked. And I feel as though everyone that uses a phone should should be aware that there are that they should check who is accessing what data. It's amazing what
you mean. You now know that I'm actually tapped into your American Express card.
No, there's not. Good luck with that. But you know, and I'm wondering how the average citizen and or the average citizen like me can learn about that. You know, there's no. Is it? I should have checked if there's a YouTube video that you know you could Google how to. Is there? There probably is.
Only if you accept the terms and conditions of YouTube.
That's right.
Exactly.
Right. Anyway, I think.
Well, yeah, there are pages that can be used for that. I actually started a page on Facebook for my friends and families, and then I had other people following as well, teaching them how to actually check. And that was way before the whole Facebook thing coming up. And so, yes, I started a Facebook page to help users understand what they are sharing and so on. I like to use an analogy for like users in general with regards to not only apps on Facebook, but apps on your phone or connected devices that you add to your house, your life, smartwatches, smart appliances, everything else, is that if a stranger comes over and knocks on your door and then you answer and the stranger is like, hey, can I come in and take a look around? Will you let him in? Most likely. I hope not.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't either.
Sure. I'm happily married, so I'm okay.
So that's the same thing with all the applications, devices, and everything else that we are adding to our life that has any type of connectivity. It's pretty much letting a bunch of strangers have access to a bunch of information that we don't know. And that's one of the premises of the GDPR. No more not knowing what you're sharing. No more not having ownership over their data. Because not only these companies are having access to your data, but they are mishandling it. They don't have enough security around it. They are compromising your physical and your digital security or financial stability even. And they're also many times profiting over your own data without your consent, without your knowledge.
And so, just to play devil's advocate, there is the other side of this, which is that to some degree, GDPR is an outgrowth of the right to be forgotten law,
yes,
which existed in Germany. Can you mention that a little bit?
Definitely. So like we were talking before, the GDPR, the main basis is that users must have total ownership and control over their data. One of this control and ownership is the right to be forgotten. That means that users at any time, if they don't want anymore your services or anything like that, they can have the right, they have the right to contact you and request that all their data is deleted. And then the companies must ensure that not only the complete deletion of their data, but also those companies with whom they have shared for any reason the data have also deleted the data in request. And one of the funny things about, not too funny, but interesting, I'd say, about Germany is that Germany is one of the, you know, like EU state members that is that has one of the most strict laws and regulations with regards to data privacy. So it is known that there is an ongoing investigation being done by Germany on over 500 US-based companies with regards to data privacy. And that's still ongoing. When May 25th hits us, then those companies that are not complying with GDPR, they are under the risk of the penalties.
What is May 20th? May 25th?
Is the deadline for companies to be compliant with GDPR.
It's when the rule comes into effect.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you're a business and you're doing any kind of business with the European Union, and I would say UK, but to be determined, you must be ready for this on May 25th.
Yes.
Or else what?
Or else you are subject to very large fines. So the way that GDPR works is a tiered approach. It depends on how severe was your breach or non-compliance and so on. But basically, it could go for example, one of the things is that if there is a data breach or data leak or any data is compromised, then the users, they have to be notified within 72 hours. If they are not notified within 72 hours, and mind that we may think, oh, that is easy. Oops, sorry. That is easy. But actually, we have to remember that some of the data breaches that have happened lately, it wasn't here until we knew. And that affected us.
Yeah, like Yahoo.
Months.
Right?
Yeah.
Or wait, or what's the other one?
There was Equifax. There was Yahoo. There were many. There was Uber also. Like, a bunch of companies were breached. Exactly. And they took months and sometimes years to notify the users. Now they have to do that within 72 hours. If they don't do that, the fine can go from, for example, for that type of fine, it's about 2% of annual turnover, so annual profit of the company, or up to 4% of annual turnover, depending on the severity, or $25 million, whichever is higher, depending on how big it was. So those are the fines the companies are going to be subject. And here we're not talking about Facebook and Google and all the big companies. We are talking about any small or medium-sized company that is not compliant and has subjects and is providing services or products or goods to anyone that resides in the European Union.
I don't know if they pay a commission or not if you turn somebody in. I'm thinking about Andrew O'Brien LLC. And
you know, I'm just thinking, what if I was a knitter and I took orders from people around? I don't know.
You better find an expert to talk to. I may be able to point to one to figure this out, because you have to take...
Oh, I'm concerned for so many small businesses.
If you are collecting personal identifiable information, then you are subject. And
Lila, I have a question. Maybe you know the answer to. You folks mentioned before about photographs. There's metadata that's included in with photographs. Do you know if that is considered some of the traceable information that has to be purged or is purgeable?
If directly or indirectly it leads someone to someone's identity, then yes.
Define metadata, please.
Oh, it's data included. For example, if you take a picture, you may have the location of the picture, the IP address, where it's being connected to.
Sometimes
stuff
even
like
a GPS
that.
Location.
Yes, exactly. So all of that is in the, that's the point. Like in Europe, it is considered. Personal identifiable information. In the U.S., we may not consider that under the law, but in the EU, they do. Hmm. And now we are subject to whatever they think.
Yeah, so, I've had a conversation with a private investigator who told more than one story of someone who used the metadata in photographs to stalk somebody to find out where they lived, because sometimes you can get GPS information from it. You can see the time.
It's very easy. It's very easy to do that. Actually, I was talking to some friends before, and one of them, it's kind of a funny story. So it's just like a bunch of friends chit-chatting online about, you know, like digital security and stuff. And then one of them starts talking about his personal life and his concern about, you know, like a girlfriend who, you know, like could be cheating or not. And then one of our friends, he actually, they put together quickly, like a server, and sent his girlfriend, who said she was home sleeping or whatever, a link to a picture. And then actually it was like a picture, but she had to click on it to enlarge. As soon as she did that, they collected the IP address where she was, and she was actually at a restaurant. She wasn't sleeping. Or at home. So it's very easy to collect metadata from, you know, like there are different ways to do that.
Amazing. So you're listening to Business IQ Radio 105.1 WBNH here in Bedford, New Hampshire. And our guest today is Lila Roback. She is the president of Digital International. It's a cybersecurity company. And we are talking today about GDPR, the new regulation that is going to impact many, many businesses in this country. And apparently it's coming into effect on May 25th. And so
2018. In case you're listening to this in 2020. You've had it for 2 years.
And you haven't
you
been
may
caught.
Be in trouble.
And you haven't been caught yet. So I guess... I'm wondering how a business, this is not the right question, but how does a business get caught? Who's going to be policing this and scouting for this? Do we know that yet?
Well, users will. I mean, let's stop to think about it. Users are the subjects that are going to be affected. That's who we are protecting, you know, like with the GDPR. So not only you're going to have authorities doing that, but you're also going to have users doing that. And as Dom said, when you asked if there would be like some bounty, how you pronounce it? My accent sometimes.
A whistleblower, as you
will. Your Irish accent is wonderful.
I like to say it's northern New Hampshire.
There you go. That's well stated. Well stated.
Yeah. So one of the things is that imagine the amount of people today that look for the minimum mistake from companies just to sue them and make some money. Like if I buy a cup of coffee that doesn't come with contain caffeine on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So imagine now that by law, EU residents, all of them, are going to be protected under the GDPR. Imagine how many wouldn't be looking for, you know, like a small reason to make some money.
Yeah. And I can give you an insight from a friend of mine. his name is John, but depending upon who's asking information, he'll use Jack or Jay or whatever. And that gives him traceability when the spam messages come in and it's addressed to Jack or to Jay or to using his middle name, George. He'll say, oh, that means that this organization that told me they don't sell my name.
That's funny.
Sold my name.
That's very easy.
Wow.
It's a dangerous place out there, Andrea.
Yeah, I know.
You know, these are big issues. Even back on the controversy around the right to be forgiven, some people say that some of that originating in Germany came from the fact that the Nazi people who were involved with the Nazi Party wanted to have a way of purging their information from the public record, and so it had a controversial beginning way back when. So.
Well, you know, the other day I left the house without my phone, and So I couldn't access any information, and I couldn't contact anyone. And I don't know if anyone here has ever, when was the last time you left the house without that device?
I periodically lose my phone. So.
Right.
And then I lost mine last year I think last year I lost mine in the UK. I was on a trip and I lost it. Actually, it was the best thing that happened to me.
But that's what I'm saying. But when you leave the house, do you always like, oh, my phone, always bringing my phone, that device?
Phone wallet keys. I always.
Phone wallet keys.
Right.
But really, and I would say anybody listening, try this. Leave the house and purposefully leave your phone. And of course, for older people like myself, you know, over 50, I think back to when we weren't so dependent on this connection to everything all the time. And not that that is integral to security or being tracked or anything. I'm just saying our world has changed so much since we've been able to, you know, exist in the age of information and everything at our fingertips, and we want it now. And
And with the Internet of Things coming, it's just going to amplify dramatically.
Oh, yes. It's already here. And the one thing about, the one thing about the GDPR with the information that they are gathering, using, and so on, it's that it's not only about the information that companies are selling or using and so on without consent, but also the data that they have gathered and they haven't protected. So another thing is that breaches happen, leaks happen. So companies must enforce security and encryption at all states of data, transiting, being stored at rest. And of course, when the data is being used, you can't encrypt it. But companies must enforce permissions to ensure that only authorized people have access to the data.
So this might seem like an obvious question, but what's the first step for a small business? Let's say you've got five employees and you're selling something in Europe. What is the first step?
Identify if you have any customers that are European Union residents. That's the first step.
Or employees, right?
Yeah, if you have, yeah, users, employees, yeah. If you're gathering data of EU subjects, so you residents. So that's the first point, to identify whether you are doing that or not. And sometimes, even if, because, for example, even if you're not directly servicing users, but if you are providing services to a EU company, you're going to have to be compliant, because they will want that. They want to make sure that everything is compliant on their side. So that means that all their providers and so on also must be compliant.
So so let's say, as a company owner, I've identified that, yes, we have exposure. Step two.
So step two is going to be doing a risk assessment.
The risk assessment.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be doing a risk assessment to see if you are complying already or if you have any sort of risks. And that's the second step. And then the third step, of course, is going to be mitigate those risks that were found during the risk assessment.
And so we're probably talking hire an expert.
Yes.
Because as a business owner, I'm busy running my company.
Yeah, they will have to hire an expert on the
subject.
So
cybersecurity firms in general, so this is another business sector, you know, that are going to get busy, it sounds like.
Yes. Many of the law firms in New Hampshire are equipped to also assist the companies with regards to GDPR compliance and also other data privacy laws and regulations, depending on the industry where they are in. And I work together with those law firms to make sure that we can assist these companies mitigating those risks as well.
Because I can imagine, sure, there's this legal component, yeah. You know, the liability and all that. That's
yes.
Whole new section of regulation, but then there's that technical part to even understand, you know, the hands-on, you know, how do we conduct the risk assessment? You know, do I audit all of my employees and see if they turn their computers off? I mean, I imagine it's very lengthy, to a multi-point assessment, I'm guessing.
Yes. I mean, the first thing is to know your systems or platforms to ensure that, you know, like, first of all, you know, like on the user side of things, we call it, for example, the customer identity and access management. Are you providing the clear language to your customers? How are you gathering the data? Are you informing them how it's being gathered, used, what data is being there? Another thing of the GDPR is that users can they have the right to access their data at like any time in a readable electronic format. So that's another thing. If they request you that, you need to be able to provide it. There is the right to be forgotten. If they don't want to use your services anymore, they have the right to have all their information deleted. So do you have currently a platform that allows seamlessly and easy management of that data? That's the first thing. Then is everything being encrypted? Is encryption being, you know, like applied at all states of the data? Are you ensuring that your servers are up to date and patched, that everything is, you know, like protected and correctly configured so it doesn't have any exploiting points? And, you know, like, so there are many aspects of the GDPR that the risk assessment is going to touch on. And also, employees training is one of them, because it doesn't matter if you provide all the security and everything around it with the technology part, but if your users come in with, you know, like a contaminated device and they can just log in with that contaminated device in your company's network, then you're just jeopardizing everything. You're creating, you know, that's a threat. So so user training should be, you know, like also very, very highly considered, not only for the GDPR, but for digital security overall.
It sounds like HR should be providing training. I don't know how this is done within companies, but somebody
should be.
Well,
there are many platforms that can be used. Yeah, there are many companies that can provide platforms. There are local companies that have some educational platform. You can pretty much assign, for example, you know, like online classes to your users. You can do tests. You can perform some simulation of attacks, like phishing attacks.
Do you know where to find? Will most cybersecurity firms know where to direct
companies to...
Well, it depends. Cybersecurity is a very broad theme. So there are many aspects of cybersecurity that can be touched, like many, many ones. Mm-hmm. And it's not every single, you know, like cybersecurity company that will have a solution that will apply right. to GDPR. And it really depends.
It's specific.
On, yes.
It's okay. specialized for yeah. sure. Yeah. There is a benefit to all of this, though, Andrea, because we've been talking about some of the negatives, which is it does unify all of the European Union rules and regulations. So if you comply, you now comply with everybody in the EU as opposed to, well, what do I do in the Netherlands? What do I do in Belgium? What do I do in Germany? Where you had a whole host of different laws with different nuances before, and now you've got one regulation. And if you, and even it's a demanding one, but if you meet that regulation, then at least, you know, throughout all of the EU, you're consistent and you can work with them. So that's yeah. a positive.
And I wonder how long it will be before the U.S. adopts this similar kind of standard.
To be honest, I think it's going to be a long time.
Mm. There's a lot of money at stake.
Unfortunately, many of our laws were made for the corporations, not for the users. So, for example, a year or two ago, I can't remember quite like precisely when it was effective, but I mean, the government passed the law that ISPs and, you know, like internet providers and so on, they have the right to use your data commercially. That's one of the. So it's like the completely opposite of the GDPR, which says that me, the user, have control and ownership over my data. The U.S. government said otherwise a couple of years ago. Yeah. So I think we have a long way to come when it comes to, you know, like data security and privacy. One of the things that I'm hoping for is that us citizens, we're going to start looking at, oh my God, like why are the European, you know, like the European Union residents protected and we are not?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that we're going to start mm-hmm. seeing how it's, you know, like being benefic to them. And then we as people are going to start pushing Congress and so on to establish laws to protect our privacy and, you know, like our ownership of our own data.
Maybe I can ask you to go off and talk a little bit more about the kinds of cyber risks that people run into. You mentioned phishing attacks before and some things like this. Yeah. There's a lot of ways that this information can be used. And I think we're all subject to, I think we all run into all kinds of issues. And you know, the whole issue of privacy, you know, what does that mean today? What will it mean in the future? There's so many people want so much information from us. I don't know if there's a way you can sort of help us get our hands around. This is a big area. I know actually we did an earlier show with you and refer people back to that wonderful show to get some more information out of it. But maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, what are some of the common cyber issues that people have to worry about? I and my wife in email all the time are getting, you know, disguised you know, emails, you know, your bank, your Wells Fargo bank account has been compromised. I don't have a Wells Fargo bank account, you know.
So. Yeah. Social engineering is one of the methods that are, you know, like largely used to perform these attacks. Basically, through all these applications and devices that we are using or the fact that we have our phones connected to Wi-Fi automatically, you know, like anywhere we go, all of it, we are exposing a huge amount of data. And with this data, the hackers pretty much will use it to model an attack that will be very hard for you to identify, whether it is, you know, like your own bank sending you a statement or, you know, like an fake email from Amazon or, you know, like
I see ones on FedEx, your FedEx package. Isn't
or
getting
that.
Delivered, yeah.
Once I got one that was basically I had a trip to Chile. And when I came back from Chile, where I was speaking at a conference, I had an email a week later. The email was the domain of the email and everything was as if it was the Chilean DMV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was telling me that I had a ticket, a traffic ticket. And it had a link saying, here, you can see the picture. Well, too bad. I didn't drive when I was in Chile, so that's why I caught it. But imagine if I did rent a car there and if I was driving there. Of course, as a cybersecurity professional, I'm way more careful with this type of emails and so on. Even when sometimes there is a real email, I think it's phishing sometimes. And I do all sort of tests and, you know, like you can drag the mouse just over the link without clicking and look at, you know, like the bar on the bottom to see what address that's actually taking you. But it's very hard to identify sometimes. And in that case, I caught, of course, because I wasn't driving, but they knew I was in Chile, which means they probably just follow me on my social network. My social network is public. I'm a professional. So, you know, like all these types of information that has been gathered and, you know, like all the information that is public because we're professionals or not. So there are many types of attacks. There is the phishing attack that comes via email. Now there is also the phishing attack that comes on your mobile device. Like a message saying, I got a message just last week saying that I won a set of speakers or something like that. And I was like, wow, I'm very lucky because I never even signed up for one. That is awesome. Who told you you cannot win the lottery without buying a ticket?
Well, you see, you're savvy and you know. But I can imagine the 23-year-old or 24-year-old or 30-year-old who may...
Or the 80- or 90-year-old who... Yeah. I think getting this isn't one of the scams that people are putting out saying... the IRS is about to foreclose on your house or something?
I mean, tax season, that's one of the most common attacks on you get emails or messages from the, you know, like the IRS. So you get from your bank, so you get from your credit card, you get from services that you use. And sometimes you even get from people that you know because they have been hacked somehow. Yes. Like when you accept different applications on your, let's say, go back, unfortunately, to the Facebook topic. But on Facebook, many of the applications request permission to post and send the messages in your behalf.
I didn't know that.
Some of them will use that maliciously to send over, you know, like links and malwares and hijack your account and so on. So and it's really hard to identify, you know, like the attacks. But there are some precautions that people can take overall. Like, for example, when you are accepting an application or adding something on your phone or buying a connected device, make sure that, first of all, you change the password, make something complex, don't repeat
not
password.
Admin, admin?
No, no, not, what, like, not what, password what, 123.
What do you mean?
Do not write down passwords. Do not use repeated passwords. Like, for example, if you use something outside of work that you use inside of work, if outside of work you're compromised because you have a connected device that was contaminated and someone, you know, like hijack your password, then you pretty much compromised your whole company because they know where you work. So, you know, like there are many things that you can avoid. So, you know, like if there is two steps authentication, I strongly recommend it. Two steps authentication.
This is why I don't bank online. Honest and really, like my bank keeps asking me, why don't you do that online? I'm like, nope. Am I being silly?
No, I mean, that's one way of doing it. Yeah, you're being careful. That's right. I mean, if you don't feel comfortable with something, then you are more than right to, you know, like be precautious.
And I like what you said before, especially for people who travel a lot. And as you said, you're set to hop on Wi-Fi networks in airports and places. And sometimes... you're not getting on what you think you're getting on, right?
No.
It's an industry.
Not at all. So one of the things, for example, a couple of years back, the Hello Barbie had a bunch of cybersecurity issues. One of them was that they found that the cell phones, the mobile devices that had the Hello Barbie application, they were set to automatically connect to Wi-Fis that had the Barbie name on it. So, you know, like hackers can use that. And at all the times, like... hijacking, you know, like weak Wi-Fi spots and so on. It's very easy to do. Honestly, you can buy a $200 device that will just collect information if it's not being correctly encrypted and so on. And it's, for me, for example, I travel a lot and so on. I always try to use my hotspot. I have a strong password on my hotspot to make sure that nobody is also, you know, like taking advantage of it and so on. So I highly recommend if you leave your house to turn off your Wi-Fi, you know, like and try to use hotspot as much as you can. Avoid public Wi-Fi.
So that's a great point.
Especially on a corporate device.
So
there's a way for, what do you, we just turn off the modem? I mean,
you just turn off the Wi-Fi capabilities.
In your house.
Well, at your house, you can be connected to your Wi-Fi.
No, I mean, you said when you leave your house. I understand.
On your device.
Yeah,
I thought you were saying, like, when you go on vacation, turn off your Wi-Fi. Okay, never mind. Sorry.
Well, I do. I just use my mobile network. I don't connect to Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mean, again, as you get towards, as we see more automation, again, the Internet of Things, you know, they're talking about people being able to penetrate your network at home through your refrigerator.
Oh, they have done that already.
Yeah. I mean, there are all these access points. You know, the Amazon and
Alexa
kinds of systems.
Do you have one?
I don't.
I don't either.
No. I have the old version of the Amazon Tab, which I only use for, like, I turn on and I plug in my Pandora or whatever, and then I turn it off, and I don't leave any type of, you know, like, device like that connected. Airbnb is having some issues with that lately because there are many people that are renting their houses and so on. But if there is any type of surveillance device like an Alexa and such, they can have access to the audio and so, you know, like, and so on of the people that are being there, which is a breach of people's privacy. So, yeah, that's being an issue. Yeah, so all types of devices that are connected represent a risk and enter the door.
So you're listening to WBNH 105.1 here in Bedford, and we're talking about all things cybersecurity with our resident subject matter expert, president of Digital International, Lila Robeck, who's telling us not only about the upcoming GDPR regulations and their implications, but a general discussion about cybersecurity. And I think Andrea's hair is beginning to turn white because she's concerned about all of the dangers that she's now, she never realized.
You know, I mean, I know that people are very technologically savvy, but there are many of us that really don't go below using the device. If we can master whatever it is the device is doing for us, the software package, whatever, feel wonderful.
Yeah. One of the things that I really hope for, and if there is anybody from, you know, like school boards and someone listening to me, I am totally willing to do it, you know, like, just in pro of security, is that we have a really huge number of people of all ages and backgrounds having access to technology and to IoT devices, but we do not have digital education. So we are exposing kids very early to connected toys, to connected devices, to all of it. We don't understand the risks that it brings to our kids. And even as adults, as you guys said, some people, they don't have the basic knowledge about digital security, and they are having access to all those devices. So I think that digital education is something that we should be pushing for. We should have it in schools. We should have it at the companies. Because like I said, it doesn't matter if you spend millions of dollars with, you know, like, firewalls and, you know, like, threat intelligence services and, you know, like, identity and access management, all of it. If you don't have users that can identify threats, it doesn't matter. Because if they click on an email that is contaminated, then your whole security is compromised. And the same thing is inside our houses. We need to realize the amount of data that we are exposing from our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pictures, you know, like, their location, where they are.
Oh, kids are so stupid.
Where they go to. When people take pictures of their kids and they post on, you know, like, something in school or tag at the school, or they know where your kids are staying.
We're off to Disney World for 3 weeks. Boy, are we going to have a good time.
You know, I have to say,
you are also on the town group and, you know, like, all, and you have all of those applications that have access to your data, and you don't know who those people are behind those applications. So that's all a big risk. So I think digital security education is very, very,
very important for all of us. But, you know, kids use their social media in ways that they don't realize.
There are many problems with kids using social media. There is the problem of cybersecurity, and there is also the psychological side effect of it, because many of, you know, like, I'm sorry if I'm going completely out of subject
No, not at all.
But many of, you know, like bullying issues and so on comes from the fact that sometimes these kids are going to the social networks and they are talking to each other as if they were not people. It's almost like it's a DMZ.
Yeah.
So things that you would never say to someone's face, they are saying online without a care.
Yeah, they can be passively aggressive because it's removed, it's remote.
And it's increasing bullying and it is increasing, you know, like violent behavior is increasing psychological issues. So there is a lot of issues with exposing, you know, like young kids
also,
without any supervision.
But also, you know, a young person could take a picture that isn't proper, an improper photo, think it's funny, and send it to a friend. And then before you know it, I mean, it was a stupid thing to do, but they don't understand how.
It becomes a huge thing.
Where that picture's going.
The internet has an infinite memory.
Yeah.
It will exist someplace. In 5, 10, 15 years from now, that could pop up. People, you know, I mean, I think we've all heard stories about folks going for interviews and the companies looking at their Facebook account or their Instagram account looking to see, oh, here's a photograph of you talking about how you're getting stoned at a party or something like this.
Oh, many people have been fired over those things. Like, just they don't realize how social network can affect their personal life. So there is a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think you're really on a really important issue here, and I'm glad you brought it up, the whole issue that we spend time talking to children about safety and security, but only from the physical world. And the cyber world is as, if not more, dangerous. And I think that's a really great point that needs some more attention. So
yes.
Glad you brought that up.
Yes, yeah. I really do believe so. I think that we really need to push for, you know, like some digital education, like I said, mm-hmm. I will be more mm-hmm. than happy to go to schools and talk to kids about it because I am extremely concerned. I have nieces and nephews and, you know, like godkids that and cousins that actually, you know, like that are subject to it. And I try to teach them, but I see their friends and they have no knowledge, you know, like they don't understand.
Mm.
And it is very concerning. And we have to think about the internet this way. And let's think about, you know, like a highway, and then you have the billboards on the side of the highway and you have the cars passing. So let's say that the highways are the internet, the cars passing, you know, like they are the people and the billboards is your information. Even you just put a billboard for a second. Can you imagine how many cars already passed by and looked at it and saw it and saved it and took a picture of it and so on? So it's like you said, it doesn't matter if you took a quick picture and send it, you know, like without realizing it, and then you took it off. Mm-mm.
Snapchat.
It's already gone.
Oh. You know, right. Like Snapchat.
I hate Snapchat.
Right. I'm just saying, you know, that they think it's gone, but you can somebody could take a picture of the.
Yeah, there are some things with Snapchat since the very beginning you know, like the whole Snapchat acquisition, I already had an issue with that because it's like people are like, oh, my God, there's this application where you take a picture and disappears. And I'm like, nothing disappears on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Like,
uh-oh.
Maybe it's going to disappear for the other user, but it is somewhere, you know, like and then you start, you know, like getting. Snapchat was supposed to be like, you know, like send a picture, delete type of thing. And then you start with, oh, if you are a subscriber and you pay for it, then you can save the pictures without the other person being notified that you saved it.
Oh, boy.
And then you have the whole GPS thing. My cousin was showing me and I was really paranoid about it. She was showing me the other day that basically now I don't use Snap. I installed it for like a while just to talk to friends, but then I uninstalled it. And one of the things now is that you can see where people are in real time. You can track them. We were driving and they were showing her on a car, you know, like in a car on the map moving. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like people are tracking us like where we are all the time. Even when we're sleeping, they know where. She was like, yeah, it shows you, like, if someone's sleeping, it shows the person's sleeping. It's probably because the person is inactive for a long time and it tracks the time where the person is. I don't know, but it is creepy, the amount of
information.
I don't like, yeah, I don't like that. So,
no.
Yeah, so that's a big issue with that one.
Well, we're starting to come towards the end of the show. One of the questions I wanted to ask is, if people wanted to get better educated, you know, are there things that they can follow? Are there services from the government, or are there any places on the web that you would recommend that they can read up and learn about these things, these fields?
Of course. I mean, there are many, you know, like news sources that can be used online. Follow, you know, like technology news sources. I don't have like one specific that I look at. I just, you know, like I'm
always connected
to many of them.
Do you put out a blog yourself or something?
And I did make a Facebook page, and it's called InfoSec Queen, mm-hmm. and just like women power on the IT field. I'm one of the few
INFOSEC, right? InfoSec, Information
InfoSec
Security.
Queen. Yes,
right.
Information
Queen,
Security
yes.
Queen, yeah.
That's how I describe you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was like an empowering thing for women in IT. And I post very often teaching people about, you know, like the risks and dangers of you know, like the internet, the, you know, like the IoT world. There are many experts on LinkedIn is, you know, like one of the sources that people can also follow for, you know, like news and so on. But yeah.
And Andrea, aren't there periodically sessions run either by the High Tech Council or some other activities here in the state?
Glad you mentioned that, because on Friday the Bureau of Economic Affairs is holding a GDPR info session at, I believe it's at Rivier College.
Just before the announcement, just before the implementation, I should say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think they've been talking about it and trying to get the word out. But
the timing is great because it's
going to
hit.
So, you know, I mean, if anybody wants to learn more, I would say go online. And look for the GDPR, which is being offered by the Bureau of Economic Affairs in the state of New Hampshire, and sign up and attend that session.
Well, we're very, very pleased and proud to have our cybersecurity InfoSec queen here with us, helping us out and keeping us all informed. If people wanted to reach you, what's the best way for them to reach you, either through email, websites, telephone numbers, whatever?
Of course. And if anybody wants to, you know, like learn more and reach me, my number is 603-717-4248.
One more time.
603-717-4248. And I'm also available via email. And my email is Laila. It's spells Laila dot Roback, Roback, at digital with double L international.com. And my domain is also www.digitalinternational.com.
Great. Well, you've done really a terrific job of, I think, educating us about the pending, let's just say, excitement associated with the GDPR. And all of the implications of it. And as always, you've taken a very complicated subject and made it something that we mere mortals can understand. So nicely done. We appreciate that. Andrew, any closing words in terms of either Lila's appearance here or, as you do every week, some advice for our listeners?
Well, I have to say that every time I do get together with Lila, I learn something that I didn't know before about my data and who's, you know, and how free I am with it. So I really love our conversations, and I thank you so much for sharing your knowledge today with us and our listeners. So on that note, I will say I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.